We have Dan Greenlee coming up on this edition of Swings and Mishes. But before we get started, this podcast is brought to you by BetQL. Download the BetQL app right now in the App Store or Google Play and get a better understanding for all the point spreads this weekend in the NFL and college football, as well as all the major sports. In fact, BetQL is brought to you by the people who brought you RotoQL, the fantastic lineup optimizer for DFS players. They help you with sports wagering. The app also gives you all the information as to how the public is betting, value bets. You can also track your plays. And best of all, it's free. BetQL can help you make your office pool picks. Download it right now. It's the best app I've ever used to check lines, track plays, do anything else as it pertains to sports wagering. Again, the BetQL app is free. Google, Android, easy to use tools to understand the lines each week. And better yet, use it as your secret weapon. The BetQL app can be found at betql.co as well. Download it now. See why it's my choice for information and tracking this football season.
Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to another installment this week of Swings and Mishes on the Five Reasons Sports Network. I am your producer and co-host, Jeremy Taché, but I am not joined by Craig Mish today. Mish will be featured later on the episode. Today, I'm joined by Michael Sunbake, or as most of you probably know him on Twitter, at Dutch Bake, although spelt Beak. We had a whole conversation about this pre-show. So if you want to call him Dutch Beak, he's comfortable with that. You want to call him Bake, which is his actual pronunciation, you can go with that. But either way, Mike, Dutch, whatever we're going to call you, it is a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it a lot. It means a lot to me that I get to be on here.
Yeah, man. Very excited to have you on. And we're just going to get right into this. Really excited to get your opinion on all of this. First of all, later on in the show, as Craig just mentioned, we're going to have an interview with Dan Greenlee. So we will get into some of the stuff on the player personnel side, as he is the director of player personnel. But first, you know, the season's wrapping up, you know, just a few days now. Now that Pirates game was canceled, they're only going to play 161. And I just want to get, you know, this is your first time on the pod, so I would love to get your overall impression on how this year was, you know, from your perspective. We've talked a lot here. Mish and myself have talked a lot about, you know, how we felt about this season, and we'll probably get into that with some of the writers, as you guys know, in that crossover pod next week. But I'd love to know what your feeling is and what your impressions are of the Marlins as the season's wrapping up.
Okay, so obviously going into the season, we knew that wins-loss-wise, this wasn't going to be the best of years. We knew that. And, I mean, from what people had them as, you can say they actually outperformed projections. I mean, they're not going to lose 100 games. And I think to an extent, there's a lot of ups and downs with this team this year. I mean, we got the Brian Anderson experience, which was great. Like, that was surprising. But we also had our disappointments, like Lewis Brinson. So it's this up and down, which is going to happen in a build or rebuild, whatever you prefer to call it, whatever the Marlins prefer we call it. So I think for a build, it was a little bit disappointing with some positive steps, if that makes sense.
Look, a team that loses almost 100 games, it's really hard to come out of the season feeling positive, right?
Yeah.
But they've stuck to their guns in the way that this organization is going to be run. I really feel confident that, look, this build might take a little bit longer than I think the projections might say. Everyone's really, you know, expecting, you know, obviously next year might be kind of rough again, but everybody's expecting by 2020 for this team to be completely turned around. We can only hope. And I do trust the organization at this point. I truly do. I believe that what they're doing is being implemented in the right way. That said, it's a tough space to be in to think that with all of the guys that have been sent away, with all of the talent, that major league talent that's been sent away, and with how much, you know, their own draft picks have to develop, that this team is really going to be ready to compete in a couple years. So maybe 3-4 years down the line, but hopefully we see this build come to fruition sooner rather than later. And speaking of that, I'll transition that to our sort of next question, which is, you know, you mentioned Brian Anderson, you know, he was a rookie this year, but it feels like, you know, he had already shown a little bit last year. There's new guys with the club that came up this season that were sort of the talking points. You got Lewis Brinson, you got Sandy Alcantara, Sierra, Austin Dean, all sorts of different young guys that have come up and made sort of an impact at the MLB level. So those young guys, those prospects that we've seen at the major league level, what's your overall impact or overall impression of those players? And you can name a couple of others if there are any others that come off the top of the head.
First, I would want to knock out Alcantara because it was disappointing we didn't get to see much of him. Obviously, he had the injury. And to me, that first start, he looked good. I mean, in AAA, he looked good. And I thought that was disappointing. So I don't want to build a judgment off him, off maybe what is he at, seven starts, eight starts, not even. So I don't want to really base an opinion on that. I really like him. I think he's going to be in the rotation next year out of spring. But obviously, like, the most important people that we saw a decent sample size of is Lewis Brinson. And, you know, to me, I think he's such an important part of this build. To me, he's the difference of this build taking 2 years to this build taking 4 years.
Right.
Because, I mean, his minor league numbers, his minor league profile, it's crazy. He's super talented. You know he's talented, and it's there. But unfortunately, it hasn't transitioned to the major league level. And I think things that he needs to do is, you know, be more patient at the plate, have a better approach, walk more. I think his base on balls percentage was like around 4%, and his strikeout rate was around 30, which isn't ideal. I mean, he's young, but, you know,
it's not learning discipline at the major league level.
So I think, to me, that's a person in the major league level right now that is so important to this team and to this new wave of Marlins players that he needs to take that step next year for his team.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's on the Brinson side of things where he's the obvious but, you know, like you mentioned, he can be a cornerstone of this franchise if he turns into what everyone saw out of him at the minor league level. You know, the guys that are interesting to me, I'd love to see Sierra and Dean prove that they can be everyday Major League Baseball players. I think I have more faith at the moment that Austin Dean can. You know, we have a little bit of a relationship with him here on the pod. He came on and was fantastic, but even from a totally objective standpoint, you know, I'm super biased because I like the kid, but from an objective standpoint, you see that he's someone that has the potential to be a legitimately good corner outfielder, defensively and offensively. His power can come through. It could blossom. And I think his plate discipline for a really young hitter has been great. You know, he tore his way through the minor leagues. And so, you know, you see occasionally he's, you know, getting out on the front foot, that type of thing, you know, getting a little overeager. But when you do see him get into a groove where he's staying back and waiting on the ball, he's someone that is a gap to gap type of guy with a little bit of pop. I'm excited to see about what he can bring to this team next year. I think he'll make the opening day roster, whether it be as a starting corner outfielder because of, you know, maybe a little bit more of a dismantling of some of the veterans that are out there, or, you know, as the fourth outfielder type deal where he can come in and be a pinch hitter or things like that. So it's exciting with Austin Dean. And before we get to Dan Greenlee, we'll be to that in 1 second, but our last kind of topic before that, and this we'll be pretty quick on, but is there a specific young guy, you know, that hasn't quite reached the major league level yet? Within this organization, a specific prospect, you know, there are a few different ones out there that are the bigger names that you're looking forward to watching next season. So seeing what happens in their progress going forward,
whether it be
the major or minor league level.
To me, for everybody, it should be Monty Harrison. His athleticism is elite. He's probably, if you take it, look across major league baseball, minor league baseball, Monty Harrison's probably top 10 athlete in baseball. Like, just his athleticism really doesn't come around often in baseball.
Right.
And I think he's super interesting. The power's there, obviously. 19 home runs this year in double A. And, you know, his knack has always been striking out. So obviously that takes time to approach.
Right.
To work on his approach. And next year we saw that he's going to start off in AAA, which I think is good because, you know, we know the PCL is very hitters friendly. So we can see hopefully more of his raw power and his raw numbers come out there. And yeah, he's super exciting to me. And defensively, he's already major league level.
Right.
So, yeah,
with him, you know, the interesting part with Harrison is, you know, we're all very concerned about the strikeouts, obviously, is I believe he led the minor leagues in the strikeouts.
Yeah, I believe, but it's like 36, he had a 36% K rate around there.
But at the same time, if you can improve that just a little bit, strikeouts have become way more acceptable for power hitters.
Oh yeah, for sure.
To a point where he's really not that far off. Even though he led the minor leagues in strikeouts, he's not that far off from where they need him to be. And to me, the guys that I'm really looking forward to is just kind of seeing the development of the guys that were just drafted. So Connor Scott, you know, Will Banfield, Tristan Pompey, those guys, I'm very intrigued to see their development through. Obviously, they're not going to be at the major league level next year, but those are guys that, you know, we need to watch their development. They're the key to this build. If you're not talking about the Brinson and Harrison level of it, where you were trading for the top prospects when you traded away Christian Yelich, now you're looking at the guys that you're building on your own. And so we'll hear a little bit more about those types of players and, you know, what the Marlins are looking to do as they continue going forward and continue to draft and add different players with the director of player personnel, Dan Greenlee, as he sat down with Craig at Marlins Park.
Dan, I think that most people are curious how your first year as the director of player personnel has gone and the transition of you coming over to the Marlins, how you feel you guys have accomplished things this year.
Yeah, I think we accomplished a lot in some spaces and have a lot more to accomplish in others. I think we saw really encouraging things on the player side from a large population of players. And I think there's a lot of upside in the organization. I think things are moving in a very encouraging direction. And I think we're going to see that play out in a future that's not very far away.
And a lot of people wonder about that because certainly whenever you're involved in a build, as the Marlins owner Derek Jeter has said, we've seen teams around the league take 3-4 years, maybe even some longer, and no one's really quite sure how this will turn out. I guess my next question to you is that with the Marlins making a concerted effort to showcase here at Marlins Park some of the players that were recently drafted, I know that you had a very big impact in that draft for the first time here with the Marlins. What went into that draft? What kind of players were you looking for? And what would the overall message be to fans in terms of the kind of players that we will be seeing over the next few years that this organization will draft?
I mean, I think we're looking for impact players. They're the hardest to find. They're the hardest to be creative about and acquire through other means. I mean, impact players generally have impact tools, and they show you those ingredients pretty quick. So we went after guys that we can envision, I think, without too much imagination, being impact players up the middle, in a lot of cases, for the Marlins in the future. So we like to work backwards from the major leagues. You know, great major leaguers have things in common, and we try to acquire players who have similar ingredients.
Up until, I would say, 2000, maybe 16, 17, while other teams were very heavily involved in building analytical departments, the Marlins were admittedly very far behind in that process. I would say for me personally, over the last couple of years, I did see more of a concerted effort to bring that to the light, but they didn't really value it as much as it appears as this current regime values it now. Is that accurate? And can you talk about how you implement an analytical staff to determine which players, or as part of which players, get drafted, get traded for, or cultivated through the years?
Yeah, I think, you know, in order to trust analytics rightfully, you need sturdy statistics that are, you know, as polished as they can possibly be. A lot of work is involved in organizing statistics to create models that are predictive. A lot of work goes into, ingesting data, creating statistics that you can rely on a daily basis, and, you know, on the field at the major league level, I guess all the way down through rookie ball and player acquisition, trades, the draft, anywhere else. So it's ongoing, but I having some experience with some long-standing and heavy-hitting analytics departments, I can tell you that we are competitive in that space. I think that the decisions we make are fueled by some pretty strong indicators of success. And I think that no decision is fueled entirely by analytics here, and I don't think that that's ultimately the right answer for the Miami Marlins or for anybody else. But analytics will have some, you know, if it's a pie chart, it's some sliver in every decision, some larger than others. But it's always going to be present for us, and I think we're in an increasingly good position for that piece of the puzzle to be as strong as it can possibly be.
Dan, Derek has said many times, we don't want to use analytics the most, we want to use it the best. He said that several times in interviews. So it's very apparent the teams that are using it the best. The Houston Astros are a good example of one. I would assume that the Yankees previously, as well as the Chicago Cubs, some of the teams that have won the World Series, and then you can even go far back to Billy Beane and Moneyball and all of that. So I guess the question is that when I hear something like, we don't want to use it the most, we want to use it the best, because I don't know the answer, how is it used to the best of a club's ability?
Well, I think that's where the art comes into it. I mean, it's a science, but there's an art to delivering the information, and there's also an art to deciding what information is actionable. I mean, there is just a mountain of data, and it is growing and growing and growing in baseball, and if you try to employ every, you know, pebble on that mountain, you're going to drown people. You're going to make decisions that are conflicted because it's using too many pieces, and pieces that don't really matter blending with pieces that really do. So I think it's tricky when you get down to it into actionable decision making, whether it be a game strategy or, you know, roster decisions or in any sort of baseball related decision, to employ your best pieces of information for that particular decision. So I think that there is, you know, if you're just acting upon every, you know, hint of a correlation or every sign that something is statistically significant, you're using analytics the most. You could call yourself the most analytic, you know, friendly team. But I think when it gets down to winning games, the right answer is something that employs a stream of information that players and coaches can successfully manage and act upon, and that win the day at the end of a decision about a roster or a player. So there's so much information out there. Using it all in every decision can really create a lot of unproductive results.
Okay, last couple for you. What I am predominantly actually known for is on SiriusXM hosting a fantasy baseball show every day. So that is really where, for 8 years, I've cultivated that. And I think that from my perspective, I think that I know some of the numbers that really mean something, but I'm sure that I'm missing out on something. Like, and just to give a layman's term, like, is it WAR that's more important to some others? Is it weighted on base? Is it batted balls in play? Like, I mean, is it a puzzle that you're trying to just piece together with all of those, or is there something that the Marlins look at differently than maybe I'm not seeing or others that aren't seeing?
Yeah, I guess when the game gets dissected in such a granular way that, like, StatCast allows and TrackMan, I mean, we've got TrackMan units all the way down through the Dominican Republic. So, like, that ball is being tracked in space every, you know, rotation that it spins and everywhere it moves on the field, and now at the major league level and in some minor league parks, you're getting, you know, every player's movement on any given play. And it's I guess I would say there are things that we look at, and there are decisions made on statistics that are not available in the public. I think that's just the nature of the information that's at hand. It's there's some, but I
proprietary information. Yeah. That can't be shared with anybody playing fantasy baseball because that would help me win, you know, obviously. Right. That's a key.
But I think generally, though, like, I mean, I think statistics that promote process over results are you starting to see some of those show up more in the public, and the predictive power of those can be greater than statistics that are rooted in results that, you know, can be polluted by, you know, luck and defenses and sequencing and whatever else. So we try to keep our statistics process oriented, and we try to work backwards from what works in the major leagues. So I guess I could say, as much as I could say, is the statistics that the Marlins use generally start at the major leagues, look at what things on the most granular levels are successful in the major leagues, and then try to instill that at every level that we play.
Well, Dan, good luck. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Another big football weekend is on deck, and if you bet, you got to do it over at BetDSI.com. If you use our promo code SWINGS101, they're going to match your deposit up to $2,500. You can wager on anything, college football, pro football. The NHL is getting ready to start, the NBA as well. Of course, the baseball playoffs are here. Go to BetDSI.com, enter promo code SWINGS101. They will match your deposit up to $2,500. Whether you're going to bet the Patriots or the Dolphins, anything in professional and college sports, BetDSI.com has it for you.
All right. Thank you to Dan Greenlee for sitting down with Craig for that interview. And, you know, a lot of consistency there in the approach and the message coming from this organization. You know, I think we have to trust that, you know, they talked once again. Greenlee just sat here and talked about, you know, drafting athletes up the middle using analytics. But, you know, as Craig pointed out, from the Derek Jeter perspective, using them the best, not necessarily the most. You know, it's nice to see that there's a level of consistency here with this organization. And, you know, I've seen some baseball writers talk about how Mattingly's sort of being saddled with an organization where Dan Greenlee's in charge. But listening to what he had to say, where he's the director of player personnel, I love the approach. And I kind of think the Marlins are headed on the right track here when it comes to figuring out the way that they want to approach the draft and acquiring prospects this upcoming offseason, whether that be through trades or, you know, who knows what happens with this organization. That's one thing that we could constantly say is we never know where the Miami Marlins are headed in any direction. Speaking of trades and heading in a certain direction, there's a certain someone that was a prospect on the Marlins at one point that came up and flourished at the major league level and is no longer with the organization. I'm not talking about Giancarlo Stanton. I'm actually not talking about Marcell Ozuna either. I'm talking about Christian Yelich. Dutch, Christian Yelich has absolutely dominated the National League in the second half of the year. He had a good first half. He was an all-star. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, here in the second half, he has been remarkable. And, you know, we're both sitting here just like crushed by that. I think we talked before we got on here. It's just bad luck for the Marlins that it happened to be that he took off in this way the year after they traded him, because he was never this. And I don't think ever was supposed to be this. You know, but I just love to know your impressions of what Christian Yelich's season has been like. I know this isn't necessarily Marlins talk right off the bat, but, you know, the baseball season's wrapping up, and this is the big talking point of the major leagues right now is Christian Yelich and his success.
First, I want to say it's just unfair, right? It's just unfair.
Like, right, of course.
Like, I don't want to get a little bit too off topic here.
Uh-huh.
People are always going to find something negative to say about the Marlins trades, and nothing's going to become more negative than you traded back-to-back MVPs. And obviously, we knew Yelich had special talent, but dang, man.
Yeah, he's flourished here in Milwaukee.
It's crazy.
He's a player that I don't know, and I don't believe he'll ever replicate this again. I truly believe that, you know, the Marlins, you and I, again, this is something we talked about beforehand, but like, I think the Marlins made a great trade here. Like, they acquired a lot of talent that is, you know, going to be major league talent. It's just when you're trading away a guy that then becomes the MVP, it becomes a little bit tougher to justify, especially when some of that talent has not performed the way that you would hope it would initially. as we wrap this thing up, something to look forward to here in the off season for the Marlins, at the very least, it'll be the off season, is that on October 5th, we'll finally get the Mesa showcase that we've been looking for. And it's here at Marlins Park. That's Victor Mesa. That's Victor Mesa Jr. And actually, Sandy Gaston, all out of Cuba, all major international prospects, Victor Mesa being the number one. And when we've spoken with different people around the organization, you know, it seems like the Marlins have some intrigue. I know Mike Hill on our first podcast said that he wanted you know, the Marlins to be a destination for all Latin American players, as it should be here in Miami. Those guys are out here. You know, they're going to be showing off their skills here in Miami. So, you know, what do you think about those players? And more importantly, what do you think are the chances, or not even the chances, what do you want the pursuit to be here if you're the Marlins, or if you're a Marlins fan here looking at the Marlins' pursuit of these players?
They practically have a home field advantage right now.
Mm-hmm.
They got him coming to their park. And for me, Victor, he's the guy. You have to do anything you can to get him.
And sink international money into that.
Yeah. That's something the Marlins have always been hesitant to do, is spend that money. But they have to get this guy. I mean, he's potentially franchise-altering.
Yeah.
He's the best international prospect in baseball. And, you know, he's from Cuba. So,
right.
And we've seen from, I don't know if you've seen this, but we've seen from his Twitter account, he likes a lot of Marlins stuff. So,
yeah.
I mean, it seems like the Marlins do have an upper hand if the money's there. And I believe yeah. they're second in yeah,
they're
international
second,
cap room.
They're second behind the Orioles in international yeah. cap room.
So, I mean, to me, it's all hands on deck for Victor. Throw what you can at him and
yeah, I think
in this system.
I happen to agree with you. I think now is the time to jump in on a prospect like this. Obviously, you know, the timing could work out well to where he comes in and helps to flourish to be one of those main pieces of a rebuild, or rather a build. And, you know, between him and his brother, Victor Mesa Jr., and I'm actually very intrigued to see Gaston as well. You know, these are three prospects out of Cuba that, you know, all tend to get a lot of praise from those who know a lot more than I do. And so Victor Mesa is definitely an intriguing thing. He's a level of excitement going into this offseason. And like you said, I think the Marlins should really try to sink what they can into being able to acquire him, because, you know, it's something exciting for next year for the fans, and also can be a key piece of things going forward. But that's all we got here on Swings and Mishes today on this episode. Dutch, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Thank you guys so much for having me on.